she walks into town and just like meets some dude, and he like gives her a lift like to the other side of Yosemite, you know, like literally like the other side of like north across the entire Sierra. So she misses the entire Sierra range basically, which is like, it's almost like shameful. Like she like someone drives her past the best part of the trail and then she keeps going.
All right. I hear, is there a lot of cars in your neighborhood, Mark?
Or is that there car? Are some cars sometimes drive by. Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, you know, it don't matter.
Are you listening to NASCAR on the radio,
yeah,
Mark?
Yeah, it sounds like.
I just love watching them drive in circles. It's cool.
According to the Egyptian Book of the Dead, there are two roads which a human being can follow. One of wisdom and the other of ignorance. The path of the masses is generally the path of ignorance, and the other path leads to the art shed. I'm Mad Carl.
Normal Andy.
I'm producer Chris.
And welcome to the art shed.
Oh, I cracked my beer already.
Oh, you cracked it. Somebody cracked Smith to crack a beer.
I already cracked a beer. I can crack another beer.
Do it.
Let me crack another beer.
Crack it.
I'll crack two beers and I'll
drink them both.
This is when you're supposed to fart into the microphone.
Yeah. No, there's no farting in the microphone.
Okay, here
we have sound effects for that.
Now you're going to talk over it while I'm cracking another beer. Okay.
Okay.
Here we go.
Nice.
Get all your good crack at the art shed.
Okay.
That's our last
crack a beer, crack a whatever.
Show your crack, everybody.
And no, in it. You know what? I just my intro was just about the path of wisdom leading to the art shed, and you guys have to fucking bring us down, don't you?
Well, I do it. I have to do a lot of bending over at work, so I have to show my crack often. So
and people pour beer down it,
right?
I'm really interested in Carl frantically Google searching art shed intro.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, this is all
I just made
Google
that up.
Google sourced.
There's no art shed intro in Google.
Yeah.
That's why that was a
joke.
Google,
you get the list. You get lists like 50 best art shed intros.
I was just thinking Egyptian Book of the Dead, you know, like, and I'm like, that could be a good intro, you know. Just rolled with it, you know. I kind of use some things that I find, and then I just kind of riff off of it.
A kernel of inspiration.
Yeah, I take a kernel of inspiration, and it has to be about either the distant future where robots take over, or the ancient past where
robots take over.
Yeah,
where robots are already ruling.
Yeah, something.
Where robots were creating humanity.
Or aliens.
There you
or
go.
Bigfoot. It has to be something, right? I mean, I don't know. Have you guys noticed a pattern in the start of the art shed?
Well, it always starts with the music and then you say the intro. That's the pattern.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's a pattern, but.
Did you say a curdle? Curdle of inspiration?
Kernel.
Curdle.
What's what is a curdle of inspiration?
A curdle.
It's like cheesy inspiration.
Yes.
Yeah. So we're in the art shed with Mark and Smitsa again, and we're continuing our discussion on jobs. But Carl, what are you doing with that horn?
What horn?
Oh, crap. Plague facts!
Plague facts!
That's right. Because the audience demands it, every week we bring you a new plague fact because we're living through a plague.
Yes.
And I thought since we're hopefully getting near the end of the plague, I could do some plague cures instead of plague facts. So, so I'm going to read off some nice cures. So if you get the plague, you can try rubbing onions, herbs, or a chopped up snake if available. On your boils. Or you can always try cutting up a pigeon and rubbing that over an infected body. You can drink vinegar or eat crushed minerals, arsenic or mercury. Or even 10-year-old treacle.
What's the hell?
What is that?
I feel like treacle is like, it's like old, but it's like fungus too, isn't it?
No.
That actually probably would be a cure. No, no.
Is treacle sugar?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a sweetener. It's not.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. 10-year-old treacle. So
10-year-old treacle. All right.
I mean, that might actually cure you because it might get like penicillin in it.
Right.
Like
that. There's some other good ones like they used to crush up emeralds and eat that. And they said it had the consistency of shattered glass. Sounds delicious.
Like you have the plague and your intestines are fucking right.
Yeah,
ruined.
Exactly. You have the plague. Eat some shattered glass.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's some
plague. It can't get worse. It can't get worse.
Well, you know,
I think those are alternative plague facts, I think, Andy.
I don't know. I think I feel like the president approved all of them.
The cure. Yes, exactly. The cures were actually
not
the
current one.
One of the most popular cures in parts of Europe was basically like burn all the Jews and witches. That was like it got to the point that the Pope actually came out and said, No, don't do that. And people still were like, no, that's just what we do, man. Sorry, Pope.
Yeah.
I know. I mean, that's
any excuse will do.
I didn't want to go there with that. I mean, yeah, but I guess we just can't deny facts that. That's all over the fucking plague fact that they're burning people.
I mean, when a lot of people talk about sort of evidences of, you know, anti-Semitism and statements even being made by people today in the U.S.
Right.
You can trace some of those back to the plague. I mean, it's like people just keep saying the same shit over and
probably
over again.
Early.
It's all earlier, like just, too. You know, they just think of a new way to say it, but it's all the same old insanity.
You know what? I mean, bottom line, assholes are assholes at any time. Like the normal asshole, racist asshole was a racist asshole back in the plague times, and they're a racist asshole now.
Yep.
Basically. No, really?
Yes. They have not evolved.
Well, hopefully our robot overlords will take care of that.
I hope so.
So that was Plague Facts. So the other thing I wanted to say was I just wanted to describe to people, new listeners, what the fuck the Art Shed is. I wanted to do that before Plague Facts, but
sorry, man.
Yeah, no, but you were on a roll.
I mean, you brought out that horn, too, so it's not totally my fault.
You told me to. So, the Art Shed is basically, what's the Art Shed, Andy?
Oh, snap! You turned it on me. The Art Shed is pretty much, it's kind of like a forum for the thing you do that you don't quite understand, that you just keep doing over and over again, and usually involves creativity in some way, so... For Carl, the Art Shed is his physical shed that we are in right now. We're surrounded by Carl's paintings and stuff. You know, I work in animation, but in my spare time, I'm always doing creative stuff too. Some people are musicians. I don't know. Does that quite...
Cooks. No, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah. And Chris grills stuff.
Schmitza just does tons of stuff. Repairs bikes.
Yeah.
Builds video games. Plays guitar. He's
I do artsy things, but I've never like done anything that anybody knows about with artsy things. But I don't do anything specific, so that's why I do so many weird things. So yeah,
that's perfect. That's exactly what the Art Shed is about.
And we do have the occasional, you know, forays into exploring consciousness and perceptions of reality.
Yeah. I mean, right. I mean, that's what it is. I mean, yeah, right. That's what the Art Shed's all about. All of that stuff. Yeah. Exactly. But right now, we're doing odd jobs. Or jobs. Weird jobs. That's why we have Schmitza.
Yeah, we want to.
Weird jobs and odd jobs are two entirely different meanings.
Right. Sorry.
Odd jobs are unrelated things, and weird jobs are just weird.
Right. Odd jobs, you might get like a hat with like a, you know, a blade carved into it thrown at you or something like that.
Right.
Are you sure that's not a weird job?
Wow.
I'd say that's a weird job.
I think he was called Odd Job, though.
Yes.
Oh, wait. I think I missed the reference. Mm-hmm.
That was a... who's so working for number two?
Is this James Bond?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. It's
Carl is making an Austin Powers reference.
Austin Powers, yeah. Anyway.
Does anyone have an odd job they want to start at a
weird summer? Weird job.
Weird job.
Okay. Weird job. Sorry. This is
Odd Jobs is a different episode, okay?
Right.
I have a short one.
Okay.
That and this is another, so many of the strange jobs that I've had, I'm avoiding the whole odd job, weird job controversy. So strange jobs that I've had. basically, when I worked for the Appalachian Mountain Club, I did so many different things. They were just totally different jobs I had to do all the time. And all of my strange jobs were like that. And one thing that I had to do one time, and you guys stop me if I told this one before, but basically, there are hut systems, and these are, you know, most of them are above tree line in New Hampshire. And the ones that I was mostly at were in the Presidential Range, but also into Pemigewasset Wilderness. But anyways, they're huts that people can stay in overnight. And Lake of the Clouds Hut is the largest one on Mount Washington, holds 90 people. They, you know, you feed them a meal every night. And there are also bathroom facilities there, and it's above tree line, so you can't put a septic system in or anything like that. So there was something called the Shasta. And basically, all of the sewage from this hut with 90 people staying there every night went down through a series of tanks that started separating out the solids, and then it got even grosser liquids, and it made its way down the mountain through a series of tanks. And the top couple tanks had to be cleared out because they were mostly the solids. And it's too cold up there to compost stuff. So they'd bring basically 55-gallon drums up, and you'd have to remove the top from the Shasta and shovel out all of the solids into these drums, and they'd get helicoptered out.
Wow.
And so you'd put on a full, like, you know, environmental suit, and you just hop right in and grab a shovel and just start digging this stuff out. And the thing was, you would find the strangest things in there. So, I mean, as you can tell, that's a strange job right there.
Right.
You know, because you're above tree line, too. It's beautiful scenery. It's like Sound of Music type shit, except you're standing literally waist deep in shit and shoveling it into barrels, waiting for a helicopter to come take it away.
The hills are alive.
The hills were alive. And, but you'd find stuff in there. Like one time there was like a teddy bear in there.
Yeah,
oh, man. And it's just like, oh, this is gross. And the very first time I did this, and I didn't do it much, I just kind of like jumped in to help out. I was with this friend of mine, and we opened it up and we both jump in there, and he looks down, and the first thing he said was, "Hey, corn." And he was right. There was like a layer of corn on the top, like not covering the whole thing, but just like there's all this corn floating in there. And that still is one of the funniest things ever. That joke was just hilarious to me at the time.
But I mean, like, maybe they had like a corn roast or something the night before or something.
Yeah, it's like whatever. Yeah, I mean, but the thing is, I don't.
Man, that's disgusting.
Corn doesn't decompose when it goes through you, so it just would collect and float in the top of the chest.
Ugh.
I just remember the Cheech and Chong thing where it's like they're pretending to be dogs or something, and it's just like, oh, I like the way you put the corn in there for texture.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. There's a teddy bear, though. I felt so sorry for that teddy bear. You know, some kid loved that teddy bear enough to hike all the way up a mountain with it and take it
and then eat it.
And then I'm assuming a sibling flushed it down the toilet.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think
he didn't want to be separated by it, so he brought it into the toilet with him. And
oh yeah,
I don't. This thing was big enough. I think someone had to like jam it down there. Yeah. It really was like, how the hell did this make it through the pipes?
Right.
and so, I'm assuming it's a sibling. If a kid cared about it that much. To bring it all the way up there. And so it went from being loved that much to being in sewage.
We've all been there.
Yeah.
Does anyone else have a strange work story?
Hmm.
What the hell was that?
Is that a Neanderthal?
Is that a teddy bear? I wish I had a teddy bear. I wish I had a teddy bear.
Sound
on this board, but I don't.
I don't know. I don't think teddy bears are supposed to growl at people, generally.
Oh wait,
they're supposed
to
be really friendly, you know.
Well, except for Gloomy Bear. I was really into Gloomy Bear around 20 years ago. Gloomy Bear is awesome.
I have something for the teddy bear that ended up in the toilet. For whom the bell tolls.
Well, all I know is, you know, you're not going to see that teddy bear story in any of the upcoming Toy Story sequels, that's for sure.
No. I did have a bear based on John Lasseter called Lots of Huggin' Bear.
Oh, right.
I don't know if anyone knows the story behind John Lasseter.
I know.
I don't.
Let's say it involves lots of sexual harassment cases.
Yeah.
Gosh.
I get it. Okay.
I have a weird job that Carl might be familiar with.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah.
This is all of my weird jobs come right after high school or right after college. This was my first job out of college. When I finished college, I went back home and I was hanging out with Carl in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, with his buddy Leo, and we were on a boardwalk looking down at the passersby on the beach, and I was like, yeah, I just graduated college and I'm looking for a job and I don't know what I'm going to do. And the guy, Leo, was like, you want a job? I'll give you a job right now. And I was like, cool.
That's a good tip. It's just when you need a job, you just go places and say you need a job out loud.
And drink beer with my buddies.
Yeah, with Carl's buddies.
And he hired me to be a car salesman. And this is... And this is I've just finished 4 years of creative writing degree and now got my first job out of college as a car salesman. Mm-hmm. And I show up and he's like he gives me some pamphlets and he's like, here you go, like read up on this. They're selling Lincoln Mercuries, which were in 2003. These are like, and this is like the height of the SUV boom. It's like these giant cars.
They're beasts.
Oh, yeah.
Beast SUVs. And then like old man, the Mercury Grand Marquis, like the most like drive it. This is my last car before I die of a fucking heart failure at 80.
Or die in a car crash when you're way too old to be driving.
You're not going to die in a Lincoln Mercury, that's for sure. Whoever you hit is going to die, but you're not going
to die. Yeah, they're all like these giant gas guzzling cars. And he's like, read up. And he's like, and try and sell a car to someone. And he's like, go talk to that guy. And I like, I'm like, I don't know. I literally have never owned a car before. I'm like a bicyclist. I like riding bikes. And so I'm like, you know, and I would go up to them guy and I'm like, hey, So, you interested in buying this car? And he's like, nah, I don't think so. And I'm like, okay.
The soft sell approach.
Yeah.
And he chases you down. It's like, I'll take it.
And I go back to Leo and I'm like, dude, there's no way I can sell these things. This is totally outside of my zone. Like this is. And he's like, okay, like we'll make you the lot attendant. And he's like, so he makes me the lot attendant. And my job is to park all the cars in a straight line, you know, so that when they go in, you know, when they go to sell them, they're all orderly and in a place. And yeah, there's like a system for organizing the keys so that you can grab the right key for the right car and stuff like that. And that was way more my speed. But I was like this really skinny guy. And I, you know, I was like, you know, 125 pounds soaking wet and I would park the cars super too close to each other and everyone would, we're just having trouble like getting into the cars. They're like too close. So this one guy's like, how who parks these cars? And this guy's like, that kid right there. And I see these people just start laughing because it's like the cars are like parked super close to each other. And I'm like the only person who can get in that. But whatever, I learned all that stuff. And so this is, I'm trying to save up money so I can move away. So I'm pulling like a 9-month stretch of car lot attendant now. And it was a pretty trying job generally. I liked all the people, but the job itself was like, we went through, like, this was like the winter in Massachusetts. So we had a month long period where it was below zero with like wind chill and all the cars are outdoors. And I had to like, you know, in order for them to sell the cars, you have to make sure that they start up and they're all sitting there parked. So I'm outside below zero for a month straight, just jump starting cars to make sure that when they go to start them up, they start, you know, and it's literally like a month straight below zero. And I think I went insane, you know, like it was, you ever been like so cold that like you trick yourself into thinking that you're not cold anymore, you know, like you just, you like enter like a realm of denial where you're just like, yeah, I'm not cold, you know?
Yeah,
I don't think that's tricking yourself. I think that's called delirium.
Hypothermia.
I would go inside and I'd be like, "Yeah," everyone be like, "Shut the fucking door!" And I'd be like, "What? It's not cold out, you know?" I'm just like totally in denial.
I'm really tired. I'm just gonna lie down in this bush right over here. And I'll be fine.
I just put my head on my blackened fingers.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I only got 2 miles to get home. I'll just take a little nap.
And then, And so then the cold snap ends. And then, of course, here comes the nor'easter comes in and we get 4 feet dump of snow on top of the cars. And they're like, yeah, well, you got to dig these out. We get 600, the inventory is 600 cars and we got to dig them all out. But they're new cars, so you can't use like a shovel. You know, you have to dig them out with this car safe thing called a snow buddy. That's like it's like a foam paddle on a stick so that you don't hurt the car. So we're like digging out. You spend like a week. We spent like a week digging 600 cars out of snow. I think Carl came and helped. Do you remember that, Carl?
Yep, I totally remember it.
Carl. So we have all these salesmen like, and the guys they're super funny. The salesmen are like, they don't get paid hourly. They get paid on the commission, right? And so Leo's like, Leo's the boss, and he's like, well, you guys have to help dig out of the cars. And they're like, what? They're like, that's not part of our job. And he's like, well, you can't sell a car under 4 feet of snow, can you? And he's like, so they're all like miserable, you know, like digging this shit, not getting paid.
In plaid suits.
Of course, Carl, I don't remember why you came out. You're just being really nice. This was like a very noble thing.
I think I was laid off.
Were you laid off?
Yeah, so Leo said he'd buy me beers or something like that if I helped.
So Carl's out there digging, and I remember you had galoshes on. Do you remember?
Go on, no. I don't
remember. So we're all inside. Everyone's like, your brother's like a real funny guy. They're like, he came in and I saw him take his galosh off and he turned it upside down and like 3 pounds of snow just fell out under the ground.
Oh yeah, my feet were freezing. Oh my god. Yeah.
Carl's walking around in galoshes packed in snow between his feet and in the galoshes.
Oh, that was a brutal storm. I think it was a storm that nobody saw coming. Like normally I think they would have covered up the cars or something and they wouldn't have to dig them out. There was something weird about that storm.
I think probably the smart move would have been to move the cars undercover before the storm hit.
No, they would have moved them out, but something happened. It was like a freak storm. And it was like 4 feet or so dumping in like a, you know, like when it was getting closer to spring, do you think?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, so I helped and I had like LL Bean like rain boots, but they just filled with snow. I remember that. Oh man, my feet. Yeah. nothing could have been worse than the paper route. I would ride my bike in a paper route and throughout the entire New England winter.
Yeah.
That toughened me up for good. I mean, you got to appreciate a paper route. That will toughen you up for the rest of your life.
I think we all had the same paper route.
Yeah, I passed it on to Phil, and then Phil passed it on to you.
Yeah, and then Mark did it for a while.
Did you, Mark?
Yeah, well, this is the framing for the paper route is our father found out that they gave a $5,000 scholarship if you delivered for 4 years. So he got hosed, dude.
They didn't have, when I did the paper route, they didn't have the scholarship. And when I passed it to Phil, he got the damn scholarship.
Ah.
Bastard.
So Christine never had to do the paper route.
No.
Yeah.
Give me a break.
Get her back on the line.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Maybe we should do a speed round of weirdest paper route stories. Right.
It's a. So this was the Globe route, right?
Yeah, Boston Globe.
Did you guys ever do that Freebie newspaper one?
Yep.
Oh, I thought so, yeah.
I did the Freebie newspaper. And that was, the Globe was good because it was like all like of the smarter people in the neighborhood and you'd deliver the Globe. But I also, my cousin delivered the Herald.
Ah.
And so I would take over the Herald for him when he was on vacation. And the Herald route was way worse than the Globe. The Globe was... The Herald route, everybody had dogs. No dog was on leashes.
Yeah.
And I was attacked by, like, Doberman Pinschers. I was attacked by Huskies. I was, like every dog... Every Herald person had a brutal dog that attacked... And like back then, nobody put a dog on a leash. Like dogs hacked, like clawed my back, bit me. I had to like, there was this one hill I had to ride down as fast, the Herald route. I had to ride down as fast as I could because two Doberman Pinschers would come up. And my cousin advised me on this. And I would ride as fast as I could. And the Doberman Pinschers wouldn't be able to get you if you sped down, but if you slowed at any point, you know, they'd be nipping at you, so you had to go fast.
Yeah.
And the other thing about the Globe is there was like, I had a lot of really good customers, but then I had customers that would argue with me and they wouldn't pay for weeks. And I'd be like, so I'm not talking about like your parents were awesome. They gave me great tips, but,
They listened to the podcast, so you better say nice things.
No, they were great. No,
they were the best.
They were customers. Best because they were right across the street. Yeah. So I could, their paper was delivered first, but there was some people down like on a, what's that, court, something court. I forget what it was.
Royal Court.
This guy, he was like, oh, I paid you last week. I'm like, no, you didn't pay me. So I would be arguing with him and then he would, you know, he'd inevitably screw me over because it's an adult. I'm like 10, you know,
yeah.
like, I knew he was screwing me, but I'm like, what the, but the funny part is the Globe was like, it's on you, dude. You know, if you don't collect from the dude, you're screwed. It goes out of your tips. Lucky I made so much tips on that paper route that it covered for it all the time, but one person screwing you for a couple of weeks would really hose you, you know, like,
yeah.
And like you're 10, you're 12, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, really, you know, like the guy would argue with you, like you were, you know, a salesman from a car lot, you know what I mean? Like it was crazy, you know? And then I know after I left, they implemented something where you just sent the money into the Globe in the purse,
right.
The delivery
that
guy.
That was a lot later, though.
I think that must have been a lot later. No, yeah. You had to, I had a book. I had to check off people's weeks.
Right.
And I had to, like, it did teach you a lot about human nature and how the fucking world was going to try to screw you. And like there was a lot of really good people and though too. So it taught you about everything, I think, pretty yeah. much.
Well, I think that's a really big test for people, that there are people in the world who are getting the newspaper delivered and the money's being collected by a 10-year-old kid. And there are people who are like, oh my God, I got to pay this kid because, God, it's a 10-year-old kid. I don't want him footing the bill for this.
Right.
And there are people who are kind of like, ah, it's a 10-year-old kid. I can intimidate him and get a free paper out of it.
Yeah,
you know? Right. And it's like, man.
Right. Right. And you don't think about it at the time. You know what I mean? Right. Like, right. You're just like, you know, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you're arguing a little bit, and, like, sometimes you're like, okay, this guy gets the fucking paper last, then. You know, after a while, he's yeah. not fucking paying me. So he's either not getting a paper or he's getting a paper last. You know, fuck him, you know.
Yeah.
So I mean, your folks always got a paper first. They were and they were good. They paid monthly, so they gave me a nice tip in the end of the month. You know what I mean? Like, I'd get a nice big payment, you know what I mean? Like, so that was sweet. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
I had a funny paper route where the story where I didn't know that the bag was like the strap was adjustable, and so the bag that I had would touch the ground, you know? So I was like, oh, I can't use this bag, is too
big.
We
had our bags.
Yeah, I got the hand-me-down bag. Oh, really?
No.
I had a bag that was just way too big.
Oh, there was no adjustable. Yeah. No.
No, nobody taught me how to tie the knot in it. I'm like 8 years old or whatever.
Your older brother.
And we're getting younger and younger.
We were 8 years. Yeah. It was 10 years old. Now it's 8 years old. And yeah. Soon it's going to be like when I was two.
Mark needed a scholarship, so he had to take over the paper when we were gone. Yeah. Right.
Right.
And after Mark finished, it went to like old men driving cars at like
right
3 a.m. throwing the papers yeah. out their window.
Yeah. That's the way it went. Well, my dad did that in the 70s for the Boston Herald American, and he would take us along sometimes to chuck papers out the window, and we got donuts. It was like the best yeah. thing in the world. Oh, you get up man. At 3 a.m. and you get donuts. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
But basically, he was unemployed and he had nothing else going on except for really crappy sales jobs. It was like the recession in the 70s.
Yeah.
It was terrible. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny because when I was a little kid on Oak Street, before we got to Southgate, there was an old guy who delivered our Globe. He just delivered the Sunday paper. And I remember it was always freezing, and he always had a butt hanging out of his mouth. He was always like, hey, here's your Sunday paper. Can I get the money? He wouldn't give you the paper. He was smart. He wouldn't give you the paper until you gave him the dollar. The Sunday yeah. Globe was the best paper ever. Yeah. It was huge.
Yeah.
And
comic section.
Awesome comic section. And the old guy would not drop off the paper. He only delivered the Sunday, and he would knock on the door, and you had to answer it, and you had to pay him the dollar, or you wouldn't get his paper. He was a spread. You did. That's the difference between an old guy and a kid.
Yeah. Yeah, the yeah. Sunday paper was so big, our father had to drive us on Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
And he would always buy donuts at the end of the...
Yeah.
I remember him yeah. driving, listening to Top 40s with Casey Kasem. And, yeah, just like having the hatch in the back of the station wagon open, and you just jump out and deliver the paper.
Yeah, yeah. In. No, the Sunday paper, you had to get a ride because it was huge. You'd only be able to take one paper with yeah. you. Right.
Yeah. I mean, there was probably more content and more paper and more printing involved in the Sunday paper than in all other 6 days of the week combined. Yeah.
So just so our listeners understand that they used to print articles and news on papers and deliver them to people.
Can you get a Sunday Globe anymore?
I think
no?
you can. I think you still can. It might
but
be
it
digital.
Can't be that thick, right?
It weighed about 5 pounds.
No, yeah, yeah. yeah. It was huge. It was like a book.
Yeah.
It was an awesome paper to go
There's
through.
Some magazines and art sections and all this other stuff. And yeah.
Oh, it was awesome.
Lots of coupons.
There was
so many coupons,
shit tons of coupons, but there was a, it was an, like, to go through and just like look at that paper. I mean, I don't think there's anything like it anymore.
I used to like to go through and like erase people's faces and redraw them and then just leave the paper out like it wasn't like that rich.
Right.
And then people would find it. And,
Well, do you guys remember Silly Putty? You could press it on the Globe comics.
Yeah.
We can talk about the worst comics in the best comics in the Globe since we're on the Art Shed. Family Circle.
Circus.
Oh, yeah.
You're talking about that's your favorite comic, though, Carl.
aside from Women's Day, you know, that's your favorite comic. Yeah.
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 What was the best one? Doonesbury, maybe.
Ah, come on.
Calvin and Hobbes.
I mean, I remember Farside and Calvin and Hobbes coming along.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, for the paper.
Like, it was like Peanuts. That was the only thing I would read when I was a kid. Yeah. Before that.
Yeah, Peanuts was the big one. That was like Peanuts was the blockbuster. That was I think that was like the top one, the front page of the comics, top one every week. Yeah.
I had there was a comic called Foxtrot that came out, and all my friends pointed to like the little blonde kid and was like, "That's Andy right there." It's like a little blonde nerd, annoying nerd with glasses.
Yeah. Foxtrot, wasn't that kind of like Family Ties except in comic form?
No, that's For Better or Worse.
I think. For Better or For Worse. Okay.
To finish my story about the bag, the
adjustable bag.
So the bag that you put the newspapers in was too big for me to wear.
Yeah.
So I learned how to balance the stack of papers on my handlebars on my bike, and I would ride to each house, put the kickstand down, leave the papers balanced on the bike handle, because for some reason I didn't think I'd put them on the ground. I was like, I'll leave them balanced on the bike handle, deliver the paper, get back on the bike, keep riding. And then one day I was, I can't remember what happened, but like my brakes went out on my bike and I was riding down behind Kennedy School separately, just like for fun. And the brakes went out and I was going down this hill and there was trees on both sides and it was a cement path behind the Kennedy School, and I realized the brakes were out and there was a gate at the bottom, and I saw that I was going to hit the gate at, you know, 50 miles an hour. So I bailed off the bike, and I got all road rash, right? And the bike hits the gate and the kickstand shatters off of it. And I was like, oh man. And so I go back the next day, got up my papers on the bike, and I get to the first house and I'm like, shit, there's no kickstand. And I'm like, what am I going to do? And so I decide to just balance it against the car in the driveway. instead of the logical thing would be put the papers on the ground, put the bike down, deliver the paper. But that seemed like way too many steps.
Yeah.
Because if I had to, then I would have to pick the papers up, put it back on. But if I leave them balanced on the bar, then I can just grab the bike and get on it. So I started balancing the bike against people's cars in their driveways while I was delivering the paper. And every once in a while I would do it poorly and the bike would fall and like leave like a huge scratch on the car. And so the Goldens, this guy, Mr. Golden, lives down the street. I fucked his car up so bad. Like there's like a scratch, like straight, like it would look like, you know, like in the movies when someone keys their car and they're trying to deliberately just like go the entire length of the car. It looks like that, you know? And Golden comes out to me and the next day and he's like, look at my car. He's like, look at what you did, you know? And I was like, of course, like super offended that he was mad at me. I was like, oh, sorry, I scratched your car, Mr. Golden. I was like, oh, geez, sorry, I didn't know you were so vain, you know, like that. Like, I was just totally like,
it's just a thing.
Totally, it's just an object. It's not more important than people. I was so obtuse about it.
You asshole. Oh man,
I have to say, my parents always said, and Carl, I believe they've even said this directly to you, that Carl was the best paper delivery boy of all of them.
Yeah, what the?
They did say that to me.
They did say that, and they meant it. They meant it. Sometimes they said it when you weren't around, Carl.
That's it, man. I mean, I could hang that.
That's
on
every
my
time
hat.
We collect money from them, they'd say, "You know, your brother Carl was the better paperboy than you."
Yeah.
You, Chris, you have told the story of how you met Carl, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Good. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I think the first time Phil was on, you told that.
Dave, do you have a story about how you met Carl?
Yeah. In fact, I just edited that one. So no, we just heard it.
No, I mean, I don't really remember how I met Carl. I just knew of Carl, and people told me that I would get along with him and I should meet him. And I think your dad told me, Carl and Mark's dad told me that you should meet my son Carl. He's weird just like you, you know? And he completely denied that because he's like, "I'd never call you weird, Dave. I would never call you weird." Yeah. I'm like, "Well, like, no, I called myself weird. I called Dave weird. I was proud of it. I was okay with it because everyone else was calling me that. And I'm like, "All right, I'm weird. Okay. Yeah. You're not very interesting. Leave me alone."
Our father was a guidance counselor at the junior high.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why he was.
I don't think he who
giving
knows,
advice.
You know, who knows? But whatever. You're weird, Dave, and we like you that way.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, like Carl, you were like you were friends with everyone, like the freakiest people and like the cool people and all that. And I was just weird. So eventually, I think I was trying to get you into my band because you were like a weird dude who was interesting. But you had no musical ability.
Oh, yeah, that sucked. I know. So, I really wanted to be in the band. So I really wanted to play.
We tried you out on, like, three instruments, and you were just like,
I was
doing
awful,
drums.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you just never did that. I mean, you're a painter. You can draw. Yeah. You can do all that. But
yeah, but I wish I could. I wish I could fucking play. I mean, right? I could have been in your band. I was in it.
Yeah, yeah. We really wanted to play.
A millisecond. Oh wow!
We're always like, well, yeah, when we make it big someday, we're gonna get places. And
yeah, and you're like, you're not gonna get anywhere with you.
Yeah,
but it's it's towards the end. It's kind of like trying the tambourine and the triangle. Yeah. And just be like, oh no!
Oh, he's just this guy that just randomly like plays the. Plays the tambourine like on random beats and just snorts and just starts laughing for no reason.
You know? I could have just been like the dude. Like, I mean,
for the Jonestown Massacre.
We were in high school. We were in high school and we weren't famous. But if we got famous, I could have just been like some hanger on that just partied with everybody.
Yeah,
you were great to have at shows for a band because you would. Because we bring you there, and then people get mad at you because you'd be talking through the whole thing, and you just and people would like defend us from you, and we're like, so you like it was amazing because you'd make snarky comments, and we'd be on the stage, and we'd be talking back to you, and it's just like they thought that you were like heckling us, and and that's just Carl, leave him alone, you know, but.
No,
it actually worked out because people were like, you know, they got really into the band because this asshole was talking over us.
And... you know, I did that with Spago too, and then it wasn't on purpose. It was
no, but
like,
it was. You were great to have at the show. I mean, the audience was like, yeah, they would get kind of bent about it, but we thought it was great.
I would be at Spago's show, and I would be like, yeah, Spago, and sometimes he'd be like, Carl. Lower it a bit. He'd be playing like this
classic,
like this mellow tune, you know, like yeah. And he would be like, and I'm like, I'm just trying to fire up for the show, everybody up for the show, you know, like who knows? I was a disaster. I might have, you know, there's a good portion of my life where I was a complete disaster. And it's not anymore. I'm totally normal now, so it's good now.
That's why you call yourself Normal Carl.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Normal Carl.
Yeah.
All right, what else you got, Dave? You got any other good jobs for us?
Jobs.
Have we asked you?
No.
This whole point was to talk about Dave's weird job.
No, yeah, it's great.
Or you could talk about being in a band.
Oh,
we get 10 minutes left.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay. Well, no, 15, I could
15 minutes.
Left. 10. We did 15 minutes. Go on. Just go, Dave.
If I'm going to randomly extract something about a job, I would say coming here was like going back in time for having a job. I came up. Yeah, Portland, Oregon. I arrived here in 2012, which was for the rest of the country was about 3 years after, 3 years prior they'd started the recovery from the economic downturn. But here it was like 13% unemployment. So you take whatever job you can get. And I came from like a bunch of high tech advanced jobs and all that kind of stuff. Like, but here I was working in breweries and loading trucks and things. But one of the first jobs I had to take was a moving job, and we're loading the dummies that you use for the first aid dummies, like off, on gurneys off of this truck into a hospital. So that was kind of surreal.
How often do you have to load first aid dummies out of trucks?
Well, they moved. It was a moving job, so they had to move everything to this location. But that was literally my first job for this moving company. It's like I'm loading like these rubber humanoid figures on gurneys into, you know, off of a truck. So that was kind of surreal. But yeah, that everything here was like, and then I was working in a brewery. It was a bit what's that 70s show with the two women in an apartment and everything, and they work at a brewery at the beginning.
Laverne and Shirley.
Yeah, right. It was literally that. I worked on a bottling line and a canning line, and there was just like these machines that go chug, 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 and I'm like, just like I didn't expect to be doing this kind of stuff at this point in life. But yeah, when one of those bottling line machines goes out of whack, it'll just fire like a machine gun. So they go really fast, and it's just like smash, 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 smash. If you like this cannon that just like a machine gun that fires bottles of beer at a wall, that's kind of what they do.
How do you stop it?
You have to hit the red button, but you have to be fast enough to make that happen, and it stops the entire line.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the kind of stuff you see. Like, oh no, one of these little bottles goes tilting, wobbling left and right, left and right, and then all of them fall over all at the same time, and then they go around this corner, and then a machine gun fires them at a wall at rapid velocity.
So there's no, it's not cute like you're eating chocolate at rapid paces.
No. Just smash, 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 smash. And then someone has to sweep up all the beer and glass off the floor.
Right. Yeah. Didn't you used to sculpt teeth?
No, I did a 3D virtual design for dental prosthetics. And I got that job from a want ad at a bagel shop.
What did the want ad say?
It said, like, engraving, you know, for machined dental products. And I applied for that. And like, would you, the CEO of the company called me. He's like, wouldn't you like to be a designer? And I'm like, yeah. I'd like to be a designer. So they hired me as a designer with no previous experience. And I went into this new field, and I was designing virtual prosthetic dentistry products and that were milled direct digital manufacturing from, 3 and 5X milling machines. So that was a very strange job. And it was, you know, one of those Cambridge startup companies kind of things. Yeah.
Right.
Were you making like CG teeth? And then they,
yeah, like machine would
the model.
I made a 3D model, and then the machine would put that out. It was based on a scan of someone's actual dentistry.
Right.
So I'd be looking at teeth rotating on a screen all day. That's a very strange job. So floating teeth in space.
Wow. Nice. So what? So it was to try and make them look realistic, or was it?
This was what they call the abutments, which go inside of they go there. It's for implant dentistry. So they took a cast of the patient's actual arches, top and bottom. Right. I forget the terminology. I had all these dentist terms in my head, and sometimes I can still remember them. But I would. That's what goes inside the crown or a bridge, and each of them, you know, being parallel, and they're milled to exacting specifications, and they're screwed right into the patient's mouth where they install the prosthetic. So that's kind of where things are now, but that was brand new technology. Just was like, oh, come in off the street, dude, it's brand new technology. Okay, here you go.
Yeah.
That was kind of cool. Yeah. They were really nice, and they paid me decent money, and that was a nice place to work. So that, I mean, that's a pleasant way to go with that. Carl got me into biotech pharmaceutical before that, which probably steered me into doing prosthetic dentistry for some weird ass reason. So I was just like, oh, I've never done this before. Okay, there wasn't an educational program for that. You just did it. And I think Carl was one of the first people to be educated in biotech. So that wasn't a field until then. Now you can't do it without a degree.
So, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
Back in the 90s.
I know, it was wide open back in the 90s. You could just get into the field easy, especially around Boston.
Yeah.
And Cambridge. Yeah. And actually, if somebody was in San Fran, you know.
Yeah, there's nothing like that in Oregon. It's a lot of like 1989 going on here. It's very strange. I actually took some temp jobs here where I was doing stuff I did in 1988, and it was very unnerving.
What was that show based in Portland? It's really cool.
Portlandia?
Portlandia.
Oh, really cool. Yeah.
I love how like they did this like song like that the world was based on the 90s, that Portland was like living in the 90s.
Well, I think a lot of Oregon is based on the 1980s, but I could be wrong on that.
No, but you know how the 90s probably was the best, some of the best years for America, maybe, like in recent memory, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, like, well,
it was before.
It's qualified, but
yeah,
you have to qualify it for certain people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe for me. It's a
It holds up differently for different people. Now I look back and I'm like, there's a lot of cringe going on there.
Yeah,
yeah. There's a lot of cringe, but I mean, I think we weren't involved in any foreign wars,
right?
You know, basically the economy was doing well, and people all across income levels were benefiting from that. And
totally,
yeah,
totally. In the 90s was like a booming time where. Everybody, yeah, exactly. Everybody was doing well, and like new technology was coming. There was a lot of hope. It was before 9/11. It was like there was so much, and like I just remember the 90s so fondly, you know. Like, I mean, maybe it was like my age at the time. I was like,
that's a big part of it.
I
think
I was like 20s and 30s, like 20s and early 30s. I know it's a big part, but I was 20s and early 30s. And in the city with my life in front of me, you know what I mean? Like so, and I just think, just when I watched the show Portlandia, they had this thing where they were miserable in L.A. and they moved to Portland, and they're like, and it was like the year, I don't know what, it was like in the 2000s sometime, 2005, whatever, and things were like shit, you know. And they moved to Portland, and they're like, hey, this is exactly like the 90s. And they're like their life was better again. Like, I don't know. Like,
well, if you look at the economic data, it's pretty clear that the 90s was a bull market for weird jobs, actually.
Totally.
You check the weird job index.
Yeah.
What is the weird job index?
That's the WJI. That's like I have all of my retirement funds in the weird job index.
So I'm going to pay for your retirement, essentially.
Yes, that's right.
I honestly think you could have rolled into any job.
Can I get anything out of this?
like I remember the 90s, like they were looking for people with less experience because like in the internet boom, they were looking for people with less experience because the theory was if you had more experience, you had more, like you were doing everything the old ways, yeah. Right? So they wanted people with no experience who had fresh ideas. So you could roll
Carl
in.
Carl was perfect.
I can see why this was your heyday. This is
Roll in and make like freaking, you know, $80,000, like hired, like, okay, yeah. yeah, the internet was booming, and it was right before the first crash. You know, I went through, I've went through multiple crashes.
Well, we graduated in 87. I mean, there was a stock market crash but in 87. I wasn't in... There was the Asian contagion in 1991. There was the dot-com crash. And then there was 9/11, and then there was another one.
No,
after
I,
that.
I know what you're saying. Okay, Dave, I know what you're saying. But listen to me. 87, I didn't have any money in the markets. 87, I had nothing in the market. To like,
I was unemployed like five times for that. Yeah.
By the year the 90s, I had money. Everybody I knew had money. We were all partying. We're like we were living like large. And then
they were doing shots at the Applebee's like nightly.
Oh, I would do shots. Like my work had a gym, like where I was working, we had a gym. We'd all work out, and then we'd go to a bar and drink all night, and then wake up and go to work. It was like
if you want to talk about a surreal experience, Carl, you got me a job at this one company that no longer exists. I think it was 97.
Okay.
So I came from this horrible manufacturing job for 9 years where I made $7.25 an hour. And it basically didn't go up by very much every year or so. And then after getting really angry at them and just quitting, randomly quitting, you're like, all right, Smitsa, I'm going to get you a job. So you got me a job at this company, and literally within a week, I'm like, here's your computer. Here's your workstation. Here, come to the champagne party where we're celebrating our milestone. And I'm I went for this crappy manufacturing company that was going up and down in flames. And I went, then we had a champagne party for our milestone. I was being introduced to PhD scientists from around the world. And they're like, what's your name? Dave, glad to meet you.
The funny part is, I don't want to talk about this too. I won't say the company, but we definitely could have hired somebody with more experience than Dave. But I'm like, you know what? I think Dave would work. You know, bullshitted you into that job, dude.
You did, yeah.
But you did a great job. I knew you were going to do a great job.
The first 2 weeks was just like, okay, I've never used anything but a mainframe green screen computer. And you're like, here's your Mac. Okay, now use this. And I'm like, I don't know anything about computers. And I'm like, after 2 weeks, I'm like, Carl, I'm freaking useless. Get me out of here. I'm going. I don't know what I'm doing. And they're just like, and they're just like, nah, Smitsa, you're freaking out. Stop freaking out. So that's basically it. And then after that, I got my shit together.
And then he became great at the job.
Yeah. I was like, I'm operating robots. I'm altering the code so the thing can work differently, you know?
But I knew you could do it, you know what I mean? Like, I'm like, why are you working at this crappy shitbag $8 an hour job, man? Just need it in, man.
That was surreal. It was nuts.
Yeah. It
that
is.
That whole transition. But it was less than 2 weeks where there was a champagne party for a milestone. So we have our Wednesday meeting where we have a science meeting, advisory board meeting, where we have to, you know, you have to sit through this meeting and stay late for work. I'm like, okay. And there's beer. Everybody drink beer. Okay. All right. Sure. So like and then there's just like, you can't pause, you know, you have to like punch this clock. I was doing a punch clock job
before. Yeah. We didn't punch clocks.
So I leapt like 30 years into the future in like a week.
Seriously. The other thing that I liked was the next job after that job that I worked with Dave with Schmitza. We had like other, like these things called whips, which was, why the hell aren't we in a pub? And this was in the 90s. And we would all get together and drink tons of beer. And then after it was all on the company, food and beer, all on the company. And then about 8 o'clock, the company would be like, okay, get the hell out of here, guys. And would just take over a bar. Like everybody I was with, we were all like in our 20s and 30s. And we would just roll into a bar and just take it over. And just everybody in the bar, you know, we were all like, like, and the funny part is I was so used to getting free drinks all the time that, like, I was like, oh shit, I'm in a bar, I have to pay for this drink. But it didn't matter because I had already 500 free drinks from the company. But the company had all these, what, why the hell aren't we in a pub where you would just grab free food and free drinks? And it was just like, you totally got spoiled. Like at the time I was like,
yeah,
this is awesome. And I was thinking,
this can't last.
When is this going to crash? Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like you always have that in the back of your mind.
Yeah. Yeah. I was in San Francisco for the internet boom.
Yeah.
And I had a roommate from Australia and he worked at a place and he was kind of like in charge of like parties at the place. So he knew where the party was every night. And every night a different internet company was throwing an insane party with free open bar and like each one trying to outdo the other one, this kind of arms race of parties. And
this was the pets.com, the first internet boom. Totally.
Yeah,
the first 2000.
90s,
yeah. Yeah, 1999, 2000.
Yeah. Yeah, it seemed longer than it was, but it was literally only 2 to 3 years.
And this place hired me. I like a friend of mine introduced me to the guy who owned the place, and he found out I made puppets, and so I showed him my puppets, and he hired me on the spot and was like, yeah, you should work here. And I was like a 2D animator, and they didn't need a 2D animator there. So half the time I was there, I didn't have anything to do. And at some point, I got all cagey, and I was like, I can't do that. Like, I was kind of going crazy there because I just felt guilty that I didn't have anything to do.
Oh, of course.
So eventually I quit.
The paper route in you.
Yeah. So I quit, and then the guy was like, well, you can just keep your office here and come hang out. And so I did that for a while.
They didn't care. Like, they literally didn't care.
And then when I left, people in the office were like, why are you leaving your computer here? You should take your computer. And I was like, this isn't my computer.
Dude, you could have milked that job for everything. Totally, and like, you were such
It was a cool place, but
you never should have quit.
Definitely like heads in the
no way. Place. You could have done whatever the fuck you wanted.
Of course. Yeah.
All right.
But that was probably around the same time you were working at.
Oh yeah. No. I know the exact moment.
Cause it was like, a very time. Time.
It was before 9/11.
Like, yeah. Yeah. And this was like the producers would like on Thursday would be at like 3 p.m. would be like pouring people shots and stuff like that in the office.
Oh yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
They had a drink card in some of the jobs I worked in, and
yeah,
it was just out of control. And like you knew things were, you knew at the time, there's no way this is going to last because people like get out of line and then everybody's going to get sued. And then
and like no one was actually working, right? It's like, who's
people were working.
They were like, some people were sleeping at the office and stuff.
Oh,
like
I think it was very effective because everybody was gung-ho.
Yeah.
They were super gung-ho and they didn't have families. So they were just like, it was all about the work. You know what I mean? And you did work and then you partied with everybody. I think it was very effective, actually.
Maybe we should adopt this model for ArcShed. See if it...
Yeah, but we're not
right. Well, the trick is to get out before you got to sell the art shed to somebody else.
No, somebody has to. We need a fund. We need a fund to buy the art shed and then pay.
There's a charismatic person that convinces somebody that they want to buy the art shed. Yeah, and you have to pay this fancy person to do that.
Yeah, if anyone wants to buy the art shed, you can write us. If you go to our anchor site.
You can. I mean, unfortunately, we'd probably have to have commercials during this stupid show.
Well, no, if they buy the art shed, they take it over and we just retire.
No, you pay somebody to buy a commercial during the Super Bowl for the art shed.
Okay, there you go.
No, they would have to, I mean, what with the art shed, they need us in the art shed, you know what I mean? Like, so we're hired, like we're working for them.
If they're buying the art shed, I'm retiring.
What? Well, then that blows the deal right there, dude. Anyway, all right. So this is way over time, guys.
Yeah.
Okay.
What is this even about?
Carl will edit it into something beautiful and insightful.
Exactly. It'll be okay. A butterfly.
Okay. Because you got another subject here that you'd actually drifted into is just what? Like really crappy bands that fell apart and all the awkward interactions that people had with crappy bands. And you know so many people that fit that category.
Oh, yeah. Ooh. Dave, we could have you back.
Yeah, you could have.
Dave,
you've
been in so many crappy bands.
Crappy bands that fell apart is an amazing episode idea.
Yeah, write that down.
No, Dave, you've been in good bands. I was joking when I said
that. I've been in good bands, but I've been in a lot of crappy bands too. Right. That's why I'm not in any band right now.
So, yeah.
All right, Dave, plug your radio station.
Freeform Portland. That's freeformportland.org. It's on the air. It's an actual terrestrial radio station. It's a low power FM community radio station, 24/7. All DJs, all music, all the time, and people are doing it live. They're doing it remote because of whatever conditions we have to deal with. And you're going to hear some interesting stuff if you listen to it.
Yeah, and you don't have to be in Portland to hear it.
No, you can stream it. There's a lot of people that put things up on Mixcloud. If you like the show, a lot of people load it up on the Mixcloud. Look for Freeform Portland on Mixcloud and freeformportland.org.
Sweet.
Awesome.
Chris?
Livefirecook.com and Livefirecook on Instagram, and that's all you need.
Yeah, I'm at andyrestino.com. You can find links to my comics and my Instagram and my, I was about to say my Livefirecook, but Livefirecook.com.
See that? I'm madcarl.com, madspiral.com, Carl, R-I-S-T-A-I-N-O, Restino, at on Instagram, if you want to check it out, because that's the feed I update most.
Yeah. And Mark, where can they find your paper route?
Mark, you can find me on planet Earth and in the third dimension.
Mark's about three blocks away from me.
Yeah, and I'm near Dave.
Six blocks. I'm sorry. Yeah, something like that.
Uh-oh, the ghost is back. You gotta get out of the shed.
I'm trying to click buttons.
Carl, do you have anything else to say?
In the plague, you had a tavern. In the plague, there was taverns, right? In the medieval times, there were taverns. And you drink there, and maybe you had the plague, maybe you didn't have the plague, but in closing time, the barkeep would say, "Hey, get the hell out of the fucking art shed."
Thanks to Spitzer and Mark for joining us on the art shed today to talk about jobs. Thanks to Carl and Chris for helping host the show. Thanks to all our listeners.
What happened?
Thanks to, I don't know, thanks to Carl for pressing the button again. Thanks to Ed Guild and Anderson and Spago for the Mad Carl stop. We'll see you all next week, or you'll hear us all next week if you keep listening. If you don't, I guess we won't, but thanks.
Yeah, that was, we went over this time.
It's all right.
Hack it up a little.
That got pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Actually. Yeah.
And like, if you're gonna teleport back in some sort of time, if it's not the 50s or the 60s, you want the 90s. You probably don't want the 2000s, right?
No.
No. Yeah. I don't know. They weren't that pretty bad for me, but I don't know.
I'm teleporting.
I think we would all have to teleport back to plague times. 1340s.
Yeah. Chris, you know all the cures now, though, so.
Yeah.
Good. Awesome. You can rub that pigeon on your boils.
Yeah.
Drink some powdered emeralds.
Let's walk around with two catfish stuck on my hands, like find the biggest catfish you can.
Broken glass and boiled pigeons.
All there is to it.
And make Kubev.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Kubev, oh, man, we've done episodes without mentioning Kubev.
Need to find a Kubev.